He is a three-time Super Bowl champion executive, a five-time NFL Executive of the Year, analyst for the NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at ScottPioli51. He joins us right now. It's Scott Pioli. Scott, Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN here in New York. Appreciate the time. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks so much for having me. Always good to be back home in New York.
I really appreciate that. And Scott, first of all, I mean, from a GM's perspective, this has got to be absolutely crazy when all of a sudden in an offseason you start to see big time quarterbacks actually changing teams and available on the trade market. I can't ever remember it being at this level.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. But I got to tell you, Chris, you know, I had a little bit of a heads up here, you know, just knowing that when it came out that the Lions, that Matthew Stafford had approached the Lions, wanted to be traded, they said that they were going to try to get that done. Also knowing, though, that he had a fifth day of the year, $10 million roster bonus that was hanging over the Detroit Lions, I kind of figured that this was going to happen pretty quickly. And you know, I heard through the rumor world that things were moving along at a fast clip. So I was a little surprised, but not really. You know, we go back a couple of years, too. Remember that Alex Smith trade happened, what, the Tuesday or Wednesday before the Super Bowl? So this seems to be a little bit more of a trend where teams are, you know, they're jumping the gun in terms of agreeing to terms to a trade. And but this one is huge. Like you said, Chris, there's no doubt this is huge because it involved two starters.
Well, with that in mind, and now we know of the Deshaun Watson situation and he wants to be traded out of Houston. Scott, why is it all of a sudden that we see these big time quarterbacks able to be moved just really from a financial standpoint? Because we've heard for so long how teams looking to trade them don't want to take that salary cap hit.
Yeah, well, and the truth is when you trade players, whether it's a quarterback or any position, you're not just trading the player. You're trading the contract, and then you're also going to have the residual of a contract. I think that this is a little bit unique because in the case of Stafford, you have a player who had a contract that was constructed a certain way, and there's only 2 years left. So the actual acceleration and or dead money wasn't going to be that fatal to the Lions. And on the flip side, the way that the Goff contract was, they just needed a team that was willing to take on 2 years of guarantees. And not every team can and or would be willing to do that. So to me, I think it was the construct of these contracts that allowed this to happen. But there's, I mean, we look around the league, you know, the reality is we talk about, you mentioned Deshaun Watson. That's going to be a really difficult contract for the Texans to trade because they're, you know, if we're at $176 million cap, let's say, this season, they're already about $18 million over the cap, the Texans, going into this season. And it's going to cost them another $7 million against the cap to trade Deshaun. So that contract is a little bit prohibitive. You know, earlier in the season, people were talking about Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan can't be traded. The acceleration in his contract is going to be impossible. So I think what people have said in the past isn't untrue. I think that this is a confluence. This is like a perfect storm for these two particular players, Chris.
Scott Pioli, NFL Network. Follow him on Twitter at ScottPioli51, an NFL Network with over 70 hours of live Super Bowl week coverage this week throughout the next few days leading up to Super Bowl 55. Scott, let's get to Deshaun Watson because everybody in New York is constantly hitting refresh right now, hoping for some news. With that in mind, when you look at this whole situation from a GM's perspective, first of all, you're Nick Caserio walking in the door. You're David Culley is the head coach. Your first thought has got to be try to fix this somehow. So if you're in that position, 100%. How are you approaching Deshaun right now to try to convince him to stay?
Well, initially, I think I would reach out to Deshaun and let him know that I want to talk. I'm ready to talk on his time. I don't think you sit back and wait until he's ready to talk with him wondering why haven't they reached out to me. Again, I know Nick, hired Nick in 2001 as an entry-level scout, and I've known David Culley forever. They're two remarkable people, and Just I have enormous respect for them. And the other thing is Deshaun is a remarkable person as well. And I think if Deshaun could maybe compartmentalize a little bit and say, okay, my issues were with other people. Let me show the grace that I know I have in my heart to at least engage these people in conversation and see what their plan is, see what they're thinking, see if I want to live with these people rather than making a rash decision based on my feelings for other people, that are not supposed to be principals in this relationship, and see how that goes. But I think the other thing that Deshaun needs to realize is, you know, six months ago, he made a very conscious choice and signed a piece of paper that made him the second highest paid player in the history of the National Football League. That came with an obligation that also came with rules surrounding it. And he has signed up for this deal, right? This is the business he chose, and this is the business partner he chose. And he has that obligation. So he didn't sign a piece of paper to say, I'm going to take this money now. I'm going to take the security now. When I want out, I'm going to get out. That's not how the National Football League works. Regardless of what side you're on, whether you believe the players don't have enough rights or the teams have too many rights, that's the business model. So the Texans have no obligation whatsoever. Nick and David and the franchise need to find that appropriate balance of making sure the player and his agent understand that without being bullies. They need to find some empathy and some compassion, and hopefully, again, I think they're three remarkable people. Again, the principal involved in Nick Caserio, David Culley, and Deshaun. Hopefully, for their sake, they come to a place. But if you're going to trade them, I don't know if there's any logical compensation out there. And a team would have to mortgage its future so far into the future to do it. It's a really delicate balance, I think, Chris.
Scott, when you look at him, if they do have to come to a point where they have to trade him, but how do you go about this when he also has this no trade and kind of can push his agenda about where he wants to go?
I see him as a borderline elite quarterback of the National Football League. And probably elite. I don't know what the trade compensation is for that. But more importantly, as we were talking earlier, when you make trades, you're also trading contracts. And whoever, if this trade happens, if a team were to get Deshaun in 2021, it's a little bit over $10 million cap hit. That's it. Which is crazy to get a quarterback with that talent this year with only $10.5 million cap hit. Now, in 2022, his cap number jumps to $35 million. Then you start, you're paying adult money then. But so in receiving that contract, that has to be, factored in as part of the compensation again, because this is having been a general manager and being in that seat. When you trade a player, you're not just trading for the player, you're trading for the contract and the potential option to change contract. And that part is very, very real.
If you're on the other side of the table, Scott, you're Joe Douglas and the New York Jets. How much is too much?
I don't know that. I can't answer that. I don't have all the facts. I don't know. I wish I was that smart, but I don't know how much is enough and how much is too much. Because, again, it's not whatever. Here's the thing about trades is you don't know what the competition is offering. You don't know what someone else is offering. And whatever the market is bearing, that's what the market will bear. So, again, you can sit there and say, I'm only going to do X, Y, and Z. But if the market is demanding more, why are you going to be sitting on the sidelines? It's not just trades. It's the trade partners.
All right. Well, then I'll ask it hypothetically. If you had four first-round picks in the next 2 years and a franchise quarterback who is borderline elite, as you put it, might be available to you, but at the same time, you have a lot of holes to fill in trying to build an organization. How do you do that?
Well, you need the draft picks. You need currency. And again, if you start mortgaging your future too much and giving away that kind of currency, I don't think that's good business. It's not how, different but similar. I'm looking at the Los Angeles Rams right now. You know, the best player on their football team is a former first-round pick in Aaron Donald. They're going to go 7 years without a first-round pick. And that allows you to compete in the now and maybe be in a place. But also, if you don't make it, then there's a real problem. I just don't subscribe personally to that mentality of team building. Now, you also have to – there's a balance in there. How many first-round picks are too many? I don't know. I don't know if I'm giving up four. Again, because there's this other whole factor. How good is your football team? Because not all first-round picks are the same. Are you giving up a first-round pick in the top five, the top 10? Or are you giving up a, you know, the 32nd pick or the – you know, the 28th pick. So not all picks are the same. So we're talking way too much speculation here. And the reality is, in the NFL, when you're sitting in a general manager's chair, you don't engage in speculation. You just don't.
The one guy that in all of it seems to have a lot written about him, but people don't know a whole lot about, is Jack Easterby. And he was in New England. You know him a little bit. Why is Jack Easterby such a seemingly polarizing figure publicly in all of this from what you can see right now?
I honestly don't know. I've known Jack, and Jack is a friend, and all of my interactions with Jack have always been positive. And I hear all these stories, and I don't know, again, what other people – I can't speak for why other people feel certain ways about other people and their relationships with people.
When you look at being a GM now, Scott, what's the most challenging part of it now versus when you first started as player personnel director in New England in 2000?
I think, it's not any one thing. I think one of the things is how much time leadership partners and leadership groups are given to try to get things changed. That is a very real and difficult thing, that, you know, we are such a, from a society standpoint, we are very, impulsive, and sometimes building something great takes a little time. And I think that the constant change is a difficult thing, and that seems to ramp up by the year. I think, you know, the game is changing. It's still the same game in certain ways, but also, you know, the way to lead is changing and evolving like it always does. But to me, I think the biggest one is time, right? And the demands on how soon you have to be at a certain level, and people aren't given enough time.
Scott, last one, and I hate to bring up a bad memory, but it's simply this. You know, we know about Steve Spagnuolo against Tom Brady. We know what happened in Super Bowl 42. Is the matchup there as simple as how he tried to approach it last time, with getting pressure with as few people as possible so that it makes it more difficult for Brady in a game like this? So you're not constantly trying to blitz him.
Yeah, here's what I'd say. I mean, blueprints are blueprints. But if you don't have the players to execute the blueprint, and that's the thing. You go back to that New York Giants team and the team that they put together and what Spags was doing that day, the team that Ernie Accorsi and Jerry Reese put together and Tom Coughlin, the group of players on that field that were executing what was being asked to be done, they were remarkable. And again, that's one of the things that I'm not sure that I'm always comfortable with. You need great coaching. And I think the most important move a general manager can make is who's the head coach. If that's the, you know, if that's the hierarchy or the structure of an organization, that's the most important decision that has to be made. Not who the first round pick is, but who's the coach. And after that, you know, you need players that are put in position. You can say, hey, listen, we got to get after the passer, Michael Strahan and OC, here's what you got to do. And if it's not those players, it doesn't matter so much. So it's a combination of those things.
Great stuff, Scott. We appreciate the insight as always. You can follow him on Twitter at ScottPioli51, part of NFL Network's 70 hours of coverage leading up to Super Bowl 55 this week. Thanks again for your time.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Take care.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.